Go ahead.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, the definitive sports video game show, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Well, hey, everybody, Rich Grisham here. Thank you, as always, for joining us. We really appreciate it. This week, we have a fun episode. I was, this past week, Brian Wiedei and I collaborated on a piece for the Sporting News about the sports game power rankings. I had never really worked with the Sporting News before. It was a lot of fun to be able to work with Brian and get that piece put together. It really is a true power rankings. It's meant really for people who might be aware of sports games and sort of into them, but maybe not as really in-depth as a lot of us are, you know, that spend so much time talking about this. Just setting the landscape for who's at the bottom, who's at the top, and who's in between. It's a really interesting analysis, I think, of the landscape today. And so today's episode is a discussion about that. Brian and I get together and talk about the methodology and why the different games are where they are. And we also have Chris Sanner from Operation Sports joining us as well for his take as well as that of the Operation Sports community. So make sure you check that out, the Sporting News, Sports Game Power Rankings. And also, before we get into the show, one last thing. I just want to mention again, the Press Row Podcast will be live at PAX East. We've got a big panel on Saturday, March 7th at 4:30 p.m. in the Bumblebee Theater. We have a terrific panel. Joining us is Sumit Sarkar, a regular Press Row panelist. In addition, we got TJ Larriman, a regular Press Row panelist, but also two special guests, including Kevin Larrabee from Back in My Play in the Fitcast, and Garnet Lee from the old days of Weekend Confirmed. And you know, all the good shows, One Up Yours, that like so many people, myself included, got into video game podcasting in the way that we are today. So it's going to be a whole lot of fun. It's going to be Garnet Lee, Kevin Larrabee, TJ Larriman, Sumit Sarkar, and me live at PAX East having a big fun panel talking about sports games at a crossroads. Can't wait. It's going to be a blast. I hope to see you there. And without any further ado, let's hop into the Sports Game Power Rankings. Well, all right, we are back. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Press Row Podcast for your Friday, February 27th, 2015. I am Rich Grisham. Very happy to be here. Very excited to be here, as always. We have, once again, we have that nice little intimate fireside chat setting between myself and my two good friends, Brian Wiedei and Chris Sanner. Brian Wiedei from Pasta Padre, welcome, sir.
It's the end of February already. This is going so fast, although you know, it's actually felt like an eternity since the Super Bowl, but we're only a month away, really, from the start of the sports gaming season, or at least the sports gaming year.
Yes.
So that's kind of exciting, too, as we get closer to MLB The Show and everything that follows.
And, of course, as I said earlier, Mr. Chris Sanner, the executive editor of Operation Sports. Mr. Sanner, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Rich. I'm excited. And Brian, just to point that out, I am so happy we're almost done with winter, but it does not feel like it right now.
Oh,
I'm just
gonna, man.
It does not feel like it. So cold. It is just ridiculous.
Oh, but here in Seattle, we're in like 60s and sun. It's beautiful.
You can do that. Just get a tan for us all. Get a tan.
So, yes, we mentioned it's the end of February. It is really, if sports video games have a season, the time between the holidays and March is its off season. And so one of the things that we have recently done is we have done something that probably should have been done a long time ago. And not necessarily for Operation Sports or for Pasta Padre, but for the, and I say this like it's a negative term, but it's not. But for the general public, for people who like sports, and they might like video games, but it's not the center of their entertainment world like it is for us.
Mm-hmm.
We have put together the sports game power rankings. I'm going to tell you guys, I love power rankings. And I love them because I'm really just don't have the time to dedicate to a whole lot of things anymore. Case in point, college basketball. Who doesn't love March Madness? Everybody does. But my goodness, the college basketball season lasts for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months before the NCAA tournament starts. There's like 14 games on every single night on every single channel. I can't possibly keep up. But like when I'm looking on Grantland and there's the college basketball power rankings, I will read that and I will, you know, I will read the synopsis. I'll look at the rankings and I will have a great idea as to the landscape of what college basketball is like. Not so much with certain other things, like, you know, with the NFL, I'm much more in tune, so the power rankings aren't as big of a deal. But the NHL is another great example, especially since the NHL went to this new conference and division alignment and the wild cards and stuff. Like, it's hard just to figure out who's even going to make the playoffs. So power rankings is a terrific way of looking at stuff. The NBA as well, we all know that the power is tilted very heavily in the Western Conference, not the Eastern Conference. So power rankings as a thing are something that I really enjoy. Again, not as necessarily, you know, the be-all, end-all, but just a real good gauge at a point in time, which is the other cool thing about them, is a power rankings is not necessarily who is going to be the best and who is going to be the worst, but, like, right now, how do you stack rank them? Brian Whitty, what are your thoughts on the concept of power rankings and sort of what they represent, and, you know, at a macro level?
Well, I think it's essentially people who, you know, trend towards fantasy sports and that love numbers and they love arguments and they, you know, and that's what you get with power rankings for any sport, of course, is you get a ton of arguments from fans of particular teams saying it's too high or it's too low. And here I was, Rich, thinking you love power rankings because your teams don't win championships.
Oh, just right for the dagger. Yeah, once again.
I kid, though. But I mean, you need something.
I was going to say his teams don't win championships except in the only sport where power rankings actually determine the champions.
Oh, yes. That's a good point. Forgot about his Alabama.
I'll take him any way we can get him. Any way.
Yeah, so you need something to fill the time, too, because as much as there's sports on almost every hour of the day, it's actually not unless you're watching a sports channel. But you need something to get you through the day, right, until you get to the games at night or you get to the games on the weekend. So it fills that gap a little bit, too. So I enjoy them. You know, we used to do power rankings in our online leagues for video games, too, just another way to kind of bring that element in. So it can be interesting. At the same time, it can be irrelevant. Well, they are irrelevant, essentially, for most sports, but it's something, again, to argue over and get that people who are really passionate about these things get into.
Chris Sander, where do you stand on the concept of power rankings as a whole, whether it's about, you know, college basketball or video games or anything else?
I mean, they're obviously, as a content creator, they're great because they create a lot of discussion and people will freak the crap out when something is just not right to them. I mean, that is just you read the comments and I'm telling you, I learn things about myself every day I post a set of power rankings that I did not know the day before. So, but seriously, you know, they're great. And, you know, there's a whole sport that I love built upon the concept of power rankings, and that's college football. So, and even to a certain extent, college basketball is built around that concept, just, you know, of ranking teams and where they stand and then, you know, throwing them out there and then letting them play it out. But I mean, I love it. I love the concept. And I can't wait to see where this list goes, Rich.
So we are here to talk about the sports video game power rankings. So this is not a measure purely of quality. This is not a measure purely of sales. This is not a measure purely of community interaction or number of users. Rather, it is a measure of all of those things combined in a way that really the whole point of this is to clearly articulate the landscape of sports video games today. And when we talk about sports video games in this context, we are talking about the big boys. We're not We're not talking about the indies, which are terrific in their own right, but we're talking about the major licensed sports video games. So, you know, games like Super Mega Baseball, games like the Golf Club don't fall under this because of the lack of licensing. Again, it's not a knock on those indie games, quite the opposite. Everybody who listens to this show knows how much fun we have playing those games. But we're looking at the big guys, and there are 8 of them that qualify again. So these are the console licensed, at least to some degree, sports video games. So to, again, set the tenor of the article that we're discussing, it is, if you are like most people of our age and, frankly, gender, right? Because, again, not to say anything out of bounds, but the majority of people who play sports video games are guys. Sorry, Kat. But, I mean, if you are somebody who doesn't spend a lot of their time, you know, really, you know, reading operations boards, reading pasta pottery, but you're, you know, you watch games on TV, you might have a copy of NBA or a copy of Madden, you know, you might pick it up every couple of years, but you're not really into it. The point of this piece is to really say, okay, here is what the landscape looks like today. Here's what's great. Here's what's not great. Here's what's most important. And here's where we are today. It's not even saying, like I said, what the best game is, but it's just more, here is, you know, from a pure power ranking standpoint, if you were going to have a tournament of sports video games, this would be the seeding. Brian Weedy, before we get into the list, other than quality, sales, and community, are there any other factors that you think of that would go into, you know, the recipe for a good power rankings of sports video games?
Well, I think certainly it kind of goes into all those three, the quality as far as feature set and how strong a game is promoted, and certainly its potential for the future. We're mostly discussing yearly, or in the case of one, I believe, will be bi-yearly games, right, that are league licensed. So as long as they hold on to those licenses, they're going to be around for a while. And we've lost so many games over the years, it's unfortunate that we're pared down to, you know, just a handful, essentially. This would have been an interesting thing to look at 10 years ago, especially with the Maddens and the NFL 2Ks of the world still, sure, alive back then. But now, yeah, it can be all relative to each other. And also relative to the gaming industry in general. I think it's really going to just depend on each game, what factors in the most, and then how they place against each other. It's kind of interesting to see how that falls together.
And Chris Sander, one of the things that we'll be sort of quizzing you on during the countdown as well as afterwards is how you think this, you know, this view from a, you know, I don't want to use the word casual standpoint, but how this view from a more, you know, from a higher level standpoint would potentially match up or not match up with, you know, with the core, the base sports video game fans at Operation Sports. Just, you know, before we even get into it, do you think that, sort of looking at the list before we get into the details, that the you know, the true hardcore fans would tend to agree or probably maybe not necessarily agree with the list in the order that it is?
I think it, I mean, obviously it depends on who you're talking to, because there's several people as far as what sports they prefer and such, and they're going to move a couple of games up and down. But I think if you are kind of a general sports fan and you love all sports, you know, if you are that guy who loved all sports equally and you bought all the games and you played them, I think the list is pretty close to what you would come up with. You know, I could see someone moving something up and down a spot or two. But generally, I think a lot of people would agree with the list, although there are going to be a lot of people who do disagree with it because of this is the sport they love and this is the game they love, et cetera, et cetera. But yes, Rich, I think you're on the right track.
All right. Well, let's get into it then. So, again, I mentioned there are 8 games that qualify for the list. And even before we get, even before I start, I want to make sure I make clear this is not, you know, there will be a number 8. And there will be a number 1 and obviously 2 through 7. This is not meant to be negative. It's not meant to be, you know, critical. It's just merely meant to, you know, in any sports, you know, in any sports tournament, right, there's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser. And at the end of the year, only one team usually comes out. Only one team wins their last game. So it's really just about mostly having fun and setting the landscape. So coming in at number eight, probably no surprise, is NBA Live. Pro basketball, it's funny, for as powerful as NBA 2K is, you know, NBA Live, it's amazing. It's the same sport as NBA 2K, which is, everybody can imagine, is much higher. You know, NBA Live, really, it's a struggling franchise, you know, as we all know, and we even discussed a bit last week. You know, EA Sports' battered NBA Live series was pulled back at the last minute in 2010 and 2012 and had a very difficult return in 2013. The latest version is miles ahead of its predecessor, but it's still, you know, it's hard to say that it's not, miles behind everybody else in this genre. On the positive side, it's probably the most accessible to newcomers of any other title on the list, and it offers a fun experience at times, but you know, it is still the redheaded stepchild of sports video games right now. Brian Weedy, is there any doubt that NBA Live is at the bottom of the power rankings list, looking upwards?
When I was thinking, when you asked me earlier about what other things are factored in, and I said potential for the future, I kind of had NBA Live in mind, because this is a series that would really surprise no one if it was canceled, if it didn't go another year, or it may go one more year, it may go two, but it's on the chopping block. It's, but you know, by far the one in the most danger of not continuing, because its sales are horrible. It sells about 2% of what NBA 2K sells, and its quality has been problematic. This year's game is decent. I mean, it's a solid game. In my review when the game came out, I said it would have been a suitable NBA Live 14 because it has gameplay issues. Its modes are, it's insufficient, I would say. But it still has some decent fun factor. And now, right now, you can go buy it for $9 or play it for free on EA Access. So it's just one of the one that I struggle with, because I'm not sure if it's going to be around.
Right.
That being said, you know, it's not a terrible game anymore. But will it stick around long enough for it to matter, for the strides it's making to matter? That's really the question at this point.
So Chris Sander, two questions for you. Number one, what is the current temperature of the Operation Sports community with NBA Live, and what can NBA Live do to get out of this? You know, again, someone's got to be at the bottom of the power rankings list. What can NBA Live do to get out of the cellar?
You know, that's two really good questions. The first one, the OS community is, as with the rest of sports gaming, very cold toward NBA Live. I mean, if you really look at it, NBA Live is just a game that, I mean, it has done itself no favors. EA has done that series no favors. And, I mean, if you give it, you know, several more years, I'm sure it will be a really good title. But I just, you know, it's one of those really bad situations. Now, what it can do to get better, that's the $9,000 million question kind of thing that everybody wants to know. Especially at EA, because they have been struggling with that themselves. I think the big thing is you just, I mean, you got to get the gameplay right, and you got to be more bold with what you're doing with your game modes and such. The simple fact is, and I mean, the game that it's competing against, it's so far ahead of even other sports titles in some respects that for Live to compete, I mean, it's got to really do some crazy things, and that's going to take a lot of money and a lot of risk on EA's part, and that's an interesting question on whether they want to do that or not. The unfortunate thing about competition is that someone has to lose. I mean, that's something that a lot of gamers who want competition, they talk about, but someone has to inevitably lose, no matter what. I mean, you just do not end up, and you can't have everybody win. that doesn't happen in business that often. So, you know, there's always a chance you could have a niche area. You know, NBA Live could carve out its niche and be fine, kind of like another game on this list we'll talk about in a second. But, you know, you if you want to truly be a winner, I mean, there's only one game in NBA basketball that can win. And for NBA Live to get to that level, I mean, you're talking about EA taking on a lot of financial risk and just taking on a lot of risk, period, to catch up. I mean, you got to talk about a complete rehash of the modes. The on-court experience has to be completely redone. I mean, it's a pretty extensive list on what needs to be improved.
Brian Widow, you've just been hired by EA Sports as the creative director, executive producer of NBA Live. Do you, once you take the helm, do you differentiate the title by creating innovative ways to play the game that are really not existent in other sim sports games, or do you double down on the on-court gameplay and try best to emulate and frankly copy, you know, NBA 2K, for example, with its career mode and GM modes and configurable leagues and things like that? Which direction do you take NBA Live?
Oh, I absolutely think it has to be something different. And if you go back to when EA turned Live and tried to turn it into NBA Elite, they had a similar thinking as well, that we have to find a way to differentiate from the superior product or the product that is certainly perceived as being superior. Because right now we have very, very little competition in sports gaming. You have mostly one game for each league, for each sport. And that's because it's hard for multiple games to survive. And I'm taking out of the picture, obviously, exclusivity, but it's hard for multiple games to survive because of the costs involved in licensing and development. And then you have to split the sales with multiple games. It just doesn't work. So NBA Live has to tap into something different. And my suggestion for a couple months now has been for NBA Live to go free-to-play Ultimate Team model, because that will get people in the door. This is a series now with a tarnished reputation. Would people actually jump back on board when they have to risk $60? They certainly haven't done that the last 2 years. So you bring in people for free who maybe wouldn't have played the game at all, and then you get them starting to spend money if they like the game or if they like the Ultimate Team mode. And it's worked for EA in the mobile space. That's where they're making a ton of digital revenue on free-to-play now, Madden and FIFA, as opposed to the traditional model. So I believe they have to do something different, whether that's something like the Ultimate Team suggestion or just an arcade game going the way of going back to an NBA Street or something. This standard basketball game with basic modes and gameplay that's years behind NBA 2K and content that's years behind, it's just not going to work when people have another option that they prefer for the same amount of money. So they have to come up with some hook to the series, or else it's going to disappear. It's not going to last.
Same question to you, Chris Sanner.
What Brian said is the absolute best thing for them to do, just to figure out a way to keep this series alive. Doing a free-to-play model is something that a lot of companies are doing. It allows you some flexibility, I think, in terms of quality, just to make a few sacrifices at the front to just get people in the door. The other thing is that, I mean, the simple rule in business, and this is a rule that you can take with you in any industry whatsoever, is if you copy the industry leader, you're always going to be behind them. I mean, it's just that simple. So they cannot copy what NBA 2K has done and hope to pass them. They got to find a new path. And I think the free-to-play model, I'm going to echo what Brian said, is a great idea. Do the Ultimate Team and try something new with NBA Live. I mean, you got the license, you got the ability. I don't know if the NBA license allows for such a thing, but it would make sense to try, out of all your sports titles, to try it this way and just give it a shot, because you're not making money on it anyways. So you might as well give it a shot and a chance to do something, you know, different, just to see if this business model is viable. Because, I mean, I just think that the annual title, you know, the annual What am I trying to say here? The annual model, the annual release model is just it's something that will not last. You know, it's something that with how everything is going within gaming, it's just something that cannot last forever. And it would be an interesting dynamic if EA tried a new business model with NBA Live and just did the free-to-play model, did the did Ultimate Team, and maybe even slowly added in excellent modes and experiences on top of that.
And if you look at how much money EA makes on, I mentioned mobile earlier, but if you look at how much they make on Ultimate Team in the Madden series and the FIFA series, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars a year. How much would they be making if people didn't have to pay $60 first to get the game? That's the question they have to be running through their heads there, and their financial people, I'm sure, have analyzed that type of thing. And it's if there's one game, if there's one series that makes the most sense to start and try that with, it's NBA Live. Because, again, if you can't get people to spend the $60 to buy the game, they're not going to be there to spend additional money in your Ultimate Team mode. So they have to get people in the door somehow.
But aren't they already doing that now? You mentioned the game's been available for $9 for quite some time.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like the NBA season is over. We just passed the All-Star break. All the good stuff in the NBA is starting to happen. You got some great playoff races going on out West in particular, in the East as well, although the quality of the basketball out West is much better. I mean, heck, for $9 or, you know, again, if you're a EA Access member, they're almost kind of doing that already, right? Yeah.
Basically, that's definitely something I noticed or something I considered about it was that, you can – if you're on Xbox One, of course, and people on PS4 are out of luck apparently, but if you're on Xbox One, you have the opportunity to play the game, try it, and of course EA's hope is that people will like it enough that they'll be interested in the game next year and maybe give it a chance.
And I played a decent amount of NBA Live. You know, I reviewed it for Games Radar, and I played it afterwards, and I certainly had some fun playing it. In fact, Brian, you and I have played some games, you know, through SharePlay that were fun. The thing about it is, though, you know, just the more you play it, and then the more you play NBA 2K, it's just, you know, NBA 2K is in almost every way just, you know, it's a better product. And I don't think anybody would dispute that. But it definitely paints an interesting picture for, you know, opportunities for NBA Live to move up. And we all want NBA Live to get better. Everybody on this show, everybody affiliated with this show, we're all in a better place if NBA Live improves and gets better. There's no doubt about it. All right, so let's move to number 7 on the list. And this may be our first controversial choice. And that is NHL, one of sports video gaming's proudest franchises for many years. NHL shipped let's face it, a shockingly thin product for the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 that lacked many modes and features that fans had come to expect on the older consoles. I still think Chris Sanner is recovering from the day that the features list finally came out for NHL. However, you know, that is to a degree old news, right? Post-release support has been helpful in some ways. For example, a single player playoff mode and online cooperative team play were added after shipping. Although the online cooperative play is still far from the EASHL mode that so many fans have been accustomed to and had enjoyed, but not so much in others. The roster and ratings updates have been sparse. So, undoubtedly, many in pro hockey's dedicated populace are enjoying aspects of NHL 15 as we speak, but this game still has a lot of work to do in 2015. This list is a consensus. Brian Wiedei, is NHL truly deserving of the number 7 slot, or perhaps should it be moved up a little bit? What do you think?
Yeah, I think a lot of that depends on whether you're looking at this list as based on this year or as far as the last sports gaming year, or as a franchise in general in the sports gaming space. Certainly, if it was based on just this last release, NHL's right at the bottom, just above NBA Live. And that's because not only did they fail to deliver the features that they promised and that consumers expected, they disturbed those consumers with the way they treated them, certainly prior to release. And And it's difficult to overcome that. And they saw that in the sales. The sales dropped significantly this year. I think from what I was told, close to about 50% lower than the previous year. So that's a concern. And NHL is not a huge seller to begin with. So it's, again, this, it's not in as much danger as NBA Live, but NHL has to be, you know, fans of the series have to be worried that EA Sports may look at the numbers if it doesn't recover this year or the next year back to the levels it had been at, that maybe this isn't a project we want to be involved in anymore. So NHL, it has had that legacy of kind of great gameplay. Certainly its presentation was better in NHL 15. They made some strides there. But without the features, without the modes that people had come to expect, without that content, it wasn't a $60 game. So NBA Live may have been at the bottom of the list because it wasn't a good game. NHL was kind of half a game, and that's why people didn't run out to buy it when it first released. And there haven't even been that many really sales to draw people into it. And I think EA has just kind of cut their losses on that one and moving on. So it's, again, I think it depends, because I think NHL going into this last year was on much stronger ground than probably a few of the franchises that'll be above it in the rankings. But that's what 1 year can do to you. And certainly EA learned a lesson from that situation.
So, Chris Hanner, same sort of question with NHL that we started with NBA Live. What is the Operation Sports temperature? You know, what is the collective opinion right now, you know, late February 2015 on NHL 15? Not how was it at launch. We certainly know that it was riotous at launch. But these days, what's OS think about NHL? And, again, how can NHL move up by the time we do this power rankings again?
You know, you basically described it. It was a riot on OS back in September, was it? Something like that. I try to black that space out of my mind. Just saw all that. It was madness. But now it's actually somewhat positive. You know, you give the game a little bit of time. People have gotten to play the game on ice, you know, on the ice. They've gotten to get a few of the features back. You know, NHL isn't in as poor a shape as you would have thought back in the fall, but you know the on ice gameplay is actually somewhat solid. The the presentation's quite good, so it's in good shape. They just need to add the modes back in, and they need to just move the franchise forward again. So it's not in the worst shape imaginable, and OSers actually they really do recognize that. And I think there's actually a hint of optimism about the game right now, and that in the future of the series, in the sense that the quality, so long as those sales come back, which, you know, hopefully they do, because that would be not a good thing if we lost an NHL game and had no NHL game whatsoever. But the quality of the series, I think this is a game that won't be in the spot next year, I don't think. But then again, every game above this game is quite good. But I just think that NHL is a game that's definitely underrated in some respects. It's just, my goodness, when it launched, it was not a $60 game, and I completely agree with that sentiment.
Brian Whitty, we've had many conversations about public perception of games. Can NHL recover from the bad missteps at launch? And I don't mean recover now. I mean, you know, next year after. I mean, you know, you have been incredibly poignant about pointing out that when customers feel burned, they often don't come back. Can NHL recover? Let's assume for a minute that next year's game is much more fully featured. Will it matter? Can they recover?
So I've been following kind of the sports gaming world closely as far as coverage and such for about 12 years now. And what I've found over the years is that consumers generally will, before they jump ship, it has to be two or three disappointing releases in a row as far as seeing really an impact on sales. What we have with NHL is something different, because it wasn't just a disappointing game. It was disappointed people who felt lied to, felt unappreciated, felt misled, certainly at the very least. And EA just did not handle that situation well at all. And so it's not even just being – because it – okay, so I'm trying to pull it all back together here, in that even if the game came back this next year with all the features people expected, there's something still there that's going to bother a lot of the consumers who already left and didn't buy this last year. And certainly, when you go a year without buying a game that you have bought every year, you maybe start to realize that you don't need it. Your life doesn't depend on it anymore. and so these people, some may come back, certainly. But I think it's a lot harder to draw them back than it is to keep people and keep them satisfied. And I'm really struggling with the idea that there's a lot of people who won't come back no matter what the game is, because they were so offended by what happened back in August or September, with the features kind of being hidden, and then just not really the company not being upfront with them. So I think that's something EA is going to have to deal with, and I'm not sure. Again, I say a lot rides on how many of those people come back this year for this series in the future. I'm not sure how well it's going to do, because when they start making promises again, are people going to get excited, or are they going to are they not going to believe what they're being told?
Chris Sander, it's a potentially toxic equation. You've got NHL, which, as we know, as we've discussed already, there are some bad feelings with the base based upon the release last year. It comes out a few weeks after Madden. It comes out a week or so, within a week or so of FIFA. And it comes out several weeks before both of the NBA games. I mean, it finds itself, it's also, let's face it, the NHL is a popular sport, but it is not as popular as the NFL or international football or NBA basketball. It is the least of the big sports as far as overall popularity. That is a really difficult equation for it to make the kind of comeback that a lot of people are hoping. Can it overcome that? And do you expect that to be overcome?
Yeah, NHL is always one of those games that's always been in a weird spot anyway. So, you get past Madden and suddenly it's already NHL time. It's that quickly. And EA did NHL no favors by moving Madden back further and further, to the point where it's almost into early September anyway. So the problem with NHL is, and the other thing is that unless you're someone who is Canadian in some way, shape, or form, or have a Canadian-sounding accent from the northern United States, you don't really think about hockey in September. What are you thinking about? You're thinking about football. You're probably thinking about basketball. There's just not that many, hockey isn't that big of a sport to begin with. With all that said, hockey is also a sport that has a very hardcore set of fans. And while they jumped ship this year, for sure, with NHL, I think the key is going to be this year. And if they get those fans back, I think NHL is just that niche title that, it's squeezed in between a bunch of games. It's in an awkward position, but it has its audience, and its audience isn't going anywhere. So long as they can get those people back into the fold, and I think, a better quality game, better modes, et cetera, and a really good quality release, I think they will get that back. Now, if they flub this year somehow, the series is in trouble. I mean, just because of what you said. It's in a bad spot in the calendar, et cetera, et cetera. NHL needs that hardcore fan base, the people who, and unlike any other real sports game in our genre, they need the hardcore fans. They have to have them on board. And to do that, I mean, they really have to play to them this year, and that's going to be the interesting thing to watch.
Well, all right, at number six is yet another potentially controversial title. This could have been in many different places. It also is a little bit off the beaten path simply because it is not an annual title. But at number six on the list is EA Sports UFC. Boxing's retreat into obscurity in real life is mirrored in video gaming. Once a staple of games, there has not even been a boxing title since 2011. And stepping into the gap has been mixed martial arts. And EA's first offering was, let's just say, it was uneven at best. However, the game's development team has given it a good deal of attention and tuning since its release, and these updates have brought in new fighters and options, meaning the UFC of today is much different from, and let's face it, it's better than the one that shipped last June. So while it does little to bring newcomers to the fold, I'm a perfect example of somebody who was not a UFC fan, played the video game, and remains not being a UFC fan. For the sport's passionate fans, it has definitely offers a solid brawling experience and a unflinching high-definition presentation of the brutality of mixed martial art. It is not for the squeamish. Brian Weedye, do you agree that this is the place for UFC on this list?
Yeah, I think this is the right fit for UFC, and it's a series that has a lot of potential, and certainly going into this release, it had a lot of potential that it failed to reach, at least with its initial release. And EA has done a good job supporting it. It's had 6 patches, I believe 18 fighters added. I'd have to double check my numbers there, but it's something in that range. And now it's available for free through EA Access, and there were many deals to get it for cheap over the past several months. So it's something that certainly EA wants to build into a mega franchise. Now the problem is that when EA got the license, UFC was already on a downward trajectory in real life in terms of popularity. And the game had been on a downward trajectory for THQ, who had the previous 3 UFC releases before EA acquired the license from the company, and the company, you know, went bankrupt and disappeared. THQ peaked with its first 2 UFC releases. It sold over 1 million copies the first one, but then it started going down, several hundred thousand copies per release. And it's one of those series that, and it's maybe the only one now that we have, where roster updates don't do it. It's generally the same fighters a couple of years ahead of now. In the next release, it's 80% of the fighters are going to be the same guys. And so this presents a real challenge for a developer, because roster updates, as much as people might make fun and say that sports game is just a roster update every year or whatever, roster updates are what sell people on the game more than anything. People buy the game so they can have the up-to-date rosters that represent what they're watching on TV or seeing in person, all their favorite players on their teams and such. So when you don't have that turnover in roster, it's a much tougher sell at $60. So that's a challenge EA will still have to deal with. This first release looked great. The visuals were great. Now, that was about as good as it got. They tried to sell the game initially to casual gamers and casual fight fans.
Did not work.
And that doesn't work. Not only does it not work for sales, I mean, it was a huge disappointment in sales internally for EA. But it doesn't work in terms of game quality, because reviewers hated it. They gave it terrible scores. The people you should have been going after, the hardcore fight fans, the hardcore UFC fans, didn't like the game. And so what happened is, over the 8 months or so since it released, EA's turned it into a game that those people like, but it's kind of too late to get those people on board. You lost your chance. You know, in a year and a half or whenever the next game comes out, maybe, you know, they'll give it one more try. But it's going to be an issue, because those people are looking for certain things, and they got it in the game now. But, you know, it's a trust issue with EA and kind of the core consumer base of some of these games.
Chris Tanner, you probably know the question I'm going to ask you, but I'll ask it anyway. Two-parter. Number one, where does Operation Sports community stand on UFC right now, today, late February 2015? And what does it have to do to, obviously it's not going to release this year, but, you know, what can it do to try to, you know, differentiate itself and appeal to more people than it currently does?
You know, I guess the big thing is that the accessibility of EA Sports UFC is just not there. I mean, you pick it up and it's just with any fighting game, though. I mean, it really does play into that stereotype where there's so many different button combinations and such that it's just a very complex sport to model. And strangely enough, I mean, boxing is a heck of a lot easier, but yet, you know, they really messed that one up. But, you know, the OS community, very positive on the game, very positive, just because of the simple fact that the post-release support has been exceptional and phenomenal for EA Sports UFC. You know, but that's the hardcore, the most hardcore. And I just think that, honestly, the big thing EA Sports UFC has to do is they are appealing to a group of people who are very casual by nature, fans of the sport they watch. So for them to release a game that really dives into the deep intricacies, that's great, but they need to have a way for someone who just wants to go in and beat the crap out of their friends and do it, you know, hot seat or online or whatever, they can do that, and yep, it makes sense. That's the only way that title is going to get mainstream appeal. I mean, otherwise you're just literally you're basically trying to market a NASCAR game, right, to the most hardcore NASCAR fans. Yes, it has its place. NASCAR fans love it. The game's probably great quality, but the general person going to a NASCAR race is going to pick up the game and be like, I just want to race.
Yep.
And it's the same thing. UFC fans just want to fight.
Now, and that's part of the problem though with UFC is that there aren't really people outside of the hardcore UFC and the hardcore fight fans who would buy a video game like this. And EA learned that because the idea of doing things like putting in Bruce Lee, they thought would draw in a bunch of non-fight fans or, you know, non-MMA fans necessarily. And it didn't work. And they made the gameplay fairly casual. And like you said, yeah, it was still complicated, but they made it fairly casual and that didn't work. So I think the idea is you have to please that hardcore group first, and then you can offer options like that, different ways to play that might be more appealing to others. But you're never going to have a successful game based on going after a group of consumers who don't exist, and that's what EA did with UFC.
And it feels like to me that even though boxing has really disappeared, you know, over the last 10 or 12 years or so, you know, the games like Fight Night, the last couple, even though boxing, it's not like it was that much more popular a few years ago, boxing just is more accessible just because, yeah, there's less to do, right?
It's more accessible, but it's also more expensive for EA because of licensing. And that's yeah, part of the issue with boxing. With UFC, they have the UFC license,
right,
just like they would have the NFL license or the NBA license. They get everybody in under that. In boxing, they have to go and pay for people individually, which is why you never saw Floyd Mayweather in the game,
right,
because he, yeah, demanded millions of dollars and the cover and all sorts of other demands just to be in the game.
Yep.
So there's a lot of considerations, yeah, that have to be made,
yeah,
there.
We're basically arguing why boxing is so terrible right,
yeah,
now. And I mean, we finally got Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao to fight, but they're both going to be walking around in walkers around the ring while they do it. But hey, that's, yeah, fine. So,
and don't forget they had to with EA UFC, they took out the ability to share fighters online because people were making these guys like Mayweather or Harry Potter or whatever licensed property people wanted to create and then sharing them. Now EA had to bring that back, and that even in itself makes boxing a little less appealing as far as a, yep, video game.
Good point. All right, well, at number five, makes me so happy just to even be able to put this on the list, is Pro Evolution Soccer 2015. Now, you guys are not playing it. Next to FIFA, you may have even forgotten about Konami's Soccer Series, which once was the king of the hill. But Pro Evolution Soccer 2015 put the series back on the map with the best-looking player movement of any game on this list, and I will stand by that, and astonishingly smart computer-controlled opponents. And while it's November, a rival date put it at an extreme disadvantage in its rivalry with FIFA. There is no doubt that Pro Evo has returned as a legitimate player in the business. Yes, it lacks the licensing of nearly all of Germany's, North America's, and most importantly, England's domestic clubs. What's happening on the pitch is arguably better than anything found elsewhere. Chris Sanner, I'm going to start with you. Pro Evolution, where does it fit in the Operation Sports community conversation right now?
It's the game that a lot of hardcore football fans, and I have to say football because if I say soccer, it's an insult to them. It's a game where they love it. They play the heck out of it. And in all honesty, it's a game that appeals to that sort of person for sure. I mean, FIFA, it's that accessible soccer football game where everybody can pick up and play it. Pro Evo, you have to know what you're doing, and you have to, you know, build up your attack. You have to do everything right just to get, you know, to get a shot at a goal. And that's something that a hardcore football fan looks at a whole lot more than, you know, the average FIFA gamer, even though, you know, FIFA does a great job with those things as well. But yeah, Pro Evo is definitely that big time hardcore, you know, just simulation of the sport that people just absolutely love if you are a fan of the sport. A
couple things about Pro Evo. Again, I am a unabashed fan of this game. I have been blown away at how well it plays on the pitch and how differently it plays than FIFA. And I am not a soccer expert. I love international football. And I do watch Premier League games, so I'm not completely unaware. But I'm also by no means an aficionado. And I am continually amazed at how when I play Pro Evolution and then I pop in FIFA, how differently Pro Evolution plays. And when you make, you know, one of the cool things about Pro Evolution, yes, it doesn't come with licensed clubs, but you can go in the editor. It's very easy to turn, you know, Merseyside Blue into Everton, and then the announcers use the name Everton, and you can really make a lot of adjustments, some of them simple, some of them complex. You can adjust the kits and the crests and all sorts of different stuff. Plus, they've also introduced their own version of Ultimate Team, and it has taken Pro Evolution much longer than any other franchise to introduce the card-collecting revenue generating mode, but they've introduced this as well. Brian Weedye, is Pro Evolution on the right track, and can it continue as it is to be a viable player in this space going up against such fierce competition in FIFA, which is arguably the biggest sports video game, and which is the biggest sports video game,
yeah,
and arguably the biggest video game in the world.
Yeah, certainly on a yearly basis. It's difficult for this series because it doesn't really have much traction in North America. That's where, you know, FIFA has grown so much in recent years, is in North America more than anywhere, really. So, but it does have its areas where it's strong. It's just different regions that we're not as familiar with. So it can survive. It's shown. I mean, that's if there's one sport that calls for more than one game, it's certainly soccer or football. So it has a place. There's just all it might just be an also ran in comparison, but it can certainly do well enough to sustain itself and hang around to improve over the years and be something that as an alternative, maybe it's as an alternative for some people, is appealing, and that hopefully, you know, it pushes FIFA to improve, although some would say that FIFA has kind of been stagnant over the last couple of years despite competition. So it's difficult really to evaluate its place. Like it being number five on our list, I think it could arguably be lower, but for things like its gameplay quality, it definitely has earned that spot.
Up next, boy, this is definitely going to generate a lot of conversation. It was the 2014 Press Row Podcast Sports Game of the Year. There's a lot of excitement about the next version of it coming out next month. But at number four on the power rankings list is MLB The Show. It is the only game in town for its league. Baseball fans have to have a PlayStation 4 if you want to get your hands on this. Let's face it, it's a beautiful experience. It offers a myriad of ways to play, from the engrossing to some people, not me, but to most people, Road to the Show career mode, or to more traditional franchise management. It also has insane amount of customizable difficulty and gameplay options to make sure that every fan enjoys what he's really good at and is not victimized by the weaker areas of his games, assuming you can find them in the menus, of course. And each game, my favorite part about it, is that each game still brings out the strategic beauty of baseball, and playing with timely hitting, base running, and pitching changes are crucial to victory. Chris Sanner is MLB The Show at number four on this list, a place that you agree with, and perhaps the Operation Sports community, would they agree with this number?
I think the OS community is definitely a lot more or a lot less on board with it being behind at least one game above it. Personally, I don't have a problem with this. We're really getting into the point where all of these games are really, really good quality. So you're kind of splitting hairs. But MLB The Show, I mean, when you get down to it, I really don't feel like it's – I mean, it just doesn't feel like the series has progressed all that much over the last several years. So, yeah, I think it's perfectly acceptable to put it here at number four. You know, it's just – it seems like a lot of the – I'm trying to put this in a diplomatic way because I really feel like the game itself was one of my favorites last year. But I have no problem as a series – it being ranked behind, for instance, the next game on the list we will talk about at some point in the very soon future, or very, very soon. But yeah, the show is just, I just think that a lot of the improvements have been very small, very incremental. It just kind of does its thing. It does it slowly. It does it steadily. And it's great every year, but it's never going to just wow you and make a huge jump and make you go, oh my goodness, where has this been? I just think it's the nature of baseball, and it's also just the nature of the game being just so good on the diamond for so long. I just think that it's just kind of in a spot where it's going to incrementally improve every year, and it's going to be great, but it's not going to be anything more than that.
Brian Weed, I have two problems with MLB The Show. And when I say problems, I mean regarding its place here in the power rankings. Number one, and we've talked about this ad infinitum, is its poor online play, which not only affects people who just want to play a game of online, but also has negatively impacted the ability to play Diamond Dynasty the way that it's supposed to be played. Mm-hmm. And number two, it's not available on the Xbox One. It is only on the PlayStation 4, so you are automatically cutting off a significant number of people who would potentially be playing this. So those are two of the main reasons that it is where it is, not higher, not lower. Do you agree with that assessment? And you know, what can the show do to potentially move up to overtake its you know, the guys in front of it?
Yeah, as to your second point, I'm not sure that's much of a factor anymore, because everybody who wanted baseball or cared about baseball knew they had to get a PlayStation 4. If they were getting an Xbox One, they were surrendering their right to complain about not having baseball, because everybody knew there wasn't going to be baseball there. So I think for the most part, what you have is people who cared about baseball, they did get the PlayStation, or, you know, they still have a PlayStation 3 or a Vita like you. But as far as its placement in the list, I think it's an appropriate spot for it because it's not a complete game. Like you said, its online play is atrocious. It's by far the worst experience of any sports game today. It has not improved over the years. And that again, this is not going to affect everyone who loves the game or buys the game, because I think most people who care about online play know that it's not going to be any good in the show now. So they kind of just accept it. But to me, when I evaluate games, and this is why I didn't name it as my top game of the year, it's about what is the most complete product, because if you're going to advertise features as being part of the product, they better work. And online for the show really doesn't. So I think that's the biggest issue. It's certainly its Achilles heel in this regard, keeping it from going higher. And not only that, but its sales of the show are not even the same ballpark, no pun intended, as the three games that are above it. So if we're talking about the factors in rankings being sales and quality, the show has issues in all those areas. That's, again, not to say it's still a good game. And people who know what they want out of it generally get what they want out of it, which is more than you can say about many of the games on the list. But that has to be factored in when you talk about where it rates relative to other sports franchises.
Number three on the list is Madden NFL 15. It can be fashionable to hate Madden. Lord knows a lot of the commenters on Pasta Padre and on Operation Sports will. An exclusive deal between EA Sports and the NFL has made it the only professional football video game for the past 10 years. And now there's not even any NCAA football, too. It's sort of a double whammy. And while no one will purport that it offers a perfect NFL experience, its latest incarnation is good. I think, frankly, it's really, really good. Steady improvements in decidedly unsexy things like blocking and kicking don't make for the best marketing material in the world, but they do make a football game a lot smoother and more enjoyable. I personally think the muscle of the new console generation has been particularly good to Madden, which really suffered at the end of the Xbox 360 and PS3 eras. I mean, I think we all agree that the NFL is the undisputed king of sports leagues, at least in North America. Madden remains a top seller and one of the most played games online among all genres. Chris Sanner, where does the Operation Sports community sit on Madden right now? And is number three the place on the list that you think they would also put it?
Oh, Rich, you had to ask that question. I think, honestly, Madden is a game that's polarizing. Yeah, you're never going to get one uniform answer from OSers about this game. I think, and the best way for me to put this, if you give Madden a fair shot, if you haven't written it off and I don't know why anybody is so upset about the fact it's the only NFL game. It's been that way for over a decade now. You know, there's been a lot of other things last a lot less time that you should be a lot more mad about. And quite honestly, there's a lot of other games that people give a free pass to that are also the only game in town for whatever reason, mainly because they just won the competition. But at the end of the day, Madden is a game that, if you give it a fair shot, this was a breakthrough year for the franchise. And a lot of people, I mean, especially on OS, that really shone through. A lot of people were fired up about the game, more so than in a long time. And I would say, as far as the buzz it generated, the amount of people that were just coming in, Madden was the second biggest game of the year for us. I mean, if we had more of an international audience, I'm sure FIFA would have beaten out Madden in that regards. But I have no problem with Madden at number three. I think Madden is a game that is continuing to get better. I think the game plays it too safe with its modes, and we'll get to that in a little later. But yeah, I just think that Madden, where it sets right now, is in a good spot. It's got a chance to be even much better next year even. So it's just a game that I am fully optimistic on. I can't wait to see where this franchise goes in the next few years.
Well, let's not wait till later. Let's wait right now. You say they play it safe. What do you want to see from Madden to potentially move it up from number three to number two or number one?
Well, you know, it sticks to this tried and true mode set, you know, feature set, and they really need to get bold, like what NBA 2K did with their modes. They need to think outside of the box. They need to think about a more engrossing experience that people want to be a part of. The NFL on Sunday is an event. I mean, it is an event each and every week during the fall and into the winter. In Madden, you play your game, and there's a little bit of a semblance of that, but not really. You know, that right there, that's the first spot you can just start. When you're playing through a season in franchise mode or connected franchise, whatever we want to call it, whenever you are playing through a season, that you should be a part of a living, active, breathing NFL world. And that's not asking for too much. I mean, other games have done similar things, and Madden, I think, is the game that is in really a unique position to really do some cool things with that, unlike other games. Because of the simple fact the NFL is an event, and the NFL is this fun atmosphere every Sunday that you can just exploit and use to your advantage as a game developer. So that's really the big thing I think that Madden is missing right now, outside of, you know, any of the other number of things. When it comes to playing through a season, it just feels like a disjointed set of kind of objectives, more so than a flowing event that you are a part of.
And let me jump in there and say, I think a lot of what Chris says is very true about the Madden series. And really, it's been an issue ever since the exclusive license was signed, because EA had to approach the game. They couldn't really take risks with it, because now they were the only one on the market and they were representing the league. And they had to try and appeal to everyone, and they didn't excel in any area because of that. It just became kind of a vanilla product. And I still think they to an extent, don't take risks that maybe you saw in NBA 2K take over the last 3 or 4 years.
So, Brian Weedow, you and I play in the Press Row Podcast Madden Online Connected franchise. I cannot think of a mode that over the years I have had more fun playing with my friends. And I don't, it's not even close, right? I mean, we have a good time. We're heading into our the draft before our third season. We've got 15, 16 different people across the country. Heck, in multiple countries, multiple time zones. The emails are terrific. The drafts are fun. The roster management is ridiculous. Teams are moving. People are retiring. Free agents are thumbing their nose at the clubs that they were a part of and moving to other teams. It is a world unto itself. Yet sometimes I feel like we're the only 16 people in the world to even play this mode. It feels to me like there's such a missed opportunity with Madden. In my opinion, the game on the field is good. Could it be better? Of course. There's a lot of things that could be better. But, heck, it's a lot better than it was before. These new video game consoles are supposed to be all about social interaction and online play. Madden, as we've talked about, has by far the most engaging ways to play online. Online CFM yet still feels almost like just this strange, weird thing that most people don't use. Is that why is that? And is that ultimately one of the reasons that Madden, even though we love that mode, it perhaps even potentially could it even be holding it back?
Oh, well, if you look over the years, and there have always been, as far as online play goes, online leagues, things of that nature, they tended not to complete. They were very rarely successful, and that's because you're reliant on people, and people have things come up. People have priorities that aren't necessarily video games. So you
ridiculous.
Have to be
ridiculous. Come on, yeah, people, get your priorities straight.
Yeah. So it has to be kind of a very dedicated thing. So that's going to be a select group of people who take full advantage of that. But the great thing about Madden's Connected Franchise is you don't necessarily need to play online. You could just be with one friend, just sharing in that experience. And I think that's probably where more people end up, is maybe doing it with one or two friends as opposed to, you know, 32 teams or whatever. But just like most things in Madden, you know, the Connected Franchise is good but not great. You know, we have its presentation is pretty poor as far as keeping you engaged on what's going on within the league. And you know, you can't practice. There's no practice mode in there, and the you know, the confidence and game planning feature of this year is kind of a step back from what they had the previous year. So there's more to it than that, just that, and I don't want to be too critical of a mode that's the only one we have in all of sports gaming now.
Yeah, please, don't say too much. Don't kill it if we don't watch out.
But like most things Madden, it's good, just not great. And that's really what it comes down to as far as the series goes over not just this last year, but the year, you know, all the years prior.
Number two on the sports game power rankings list, FIFA 15, the Electronic Arts flagship soccer franchise. It's transformed itself from an afterthought into a juggernaut over the last 6 years, helped in large part by rising interest in and televised coverage of the Barclays Premier League in the United States. Some may argue that FIFA 15 didn't do enough in its debut on the new consoles, but it was already doing plenty before that. The addition of the special Premier League broadcast presentation and the inclusion of all of the stadiums in the Premier League enhanced its already strong career modes. There are an astonishing number of ways to lose yourself in the game, from managing a big-time club to playing as a single superstar to live online matches as one of 22 individual players. It's ridiculous. FIFA remains the gold standard for many. Brian Weedy, are you surprised that FIFA is not number one on the power rankings list?
If we're going by sales, yes, obviously. FIFA is the biggest in the world. But, you know, it's got this really dedicated group of fans and that's worldwide as opposed to centralized. And we're not in the middle of that. So that's a factor in all this, is that we're really not in the heated part of where this fandom comes from. And as far as Ultimate Team goes, this is where hundreds of millions of dollars are primarily being spent. So as far as the actual people who buy the game, this might be the most engaged of any of the fan bases. But that being said, again, there is a perception that maybe it's been stagnant, even from its biggest fans. And Its appeal it can be somewhat limited by, again, where you are in the world, obviously, and whether you have a team to support and all that. And here in the U.S., I feel like they don't do enough to capitalize on the rising popularity of the MLS. So I think you could make an argument for it being number one as far as it's the biggest. But arguably, when you factor in the other things we were considering, I can see why it would not fall at number one.
Chris Sander, I have a feeling if we had done this list a year ago, FIFA would be number one. Even though it seems to me like this year, the Premier League is more popular in the United States than ever. I think that there are just more people that I talk to on a regular basis that identify with a club, that are aware of international soccer, that, you know, when you say the names of certain people, they recognize those names. But yet I think FIFA 15 also suffered just a little bit, as Brian alluded to, is resting on its laurels is not an accurate statement, but not making the same strides that they are typically known for. Now, they've made a couple of patches since launch that have improved gameplay. But I think the FIFA 15's biggest problem is Pro Evolution. Because Pro Evolution, while FIFA beats it in 9 ways out of 10, in the 10th way that Pro Evolution, or the 1 out of 10 ways that Pro Evolution beats FIFA, is the actual game on the field. It's better, it's more fluid, it's smarter. Do you get that same sense in the Operation Sports community with their perception of FIFA 15, Chris Sander?
You know, I honestly think that the thing about FIFA is, I guess the best way to put it is, there's a lot of people who really, really, really love the game, and for whatever reason they do. But I think that there's a lot of people also on OS that who are hardcore, because, you know, we deal with the hardcore, and, you know, just the community for soccer is so small on our website still, that it's hard to get a good gauge about the whole sports gaming as a whole. But it seems like a lot of people, the most hardcore soccer fans, are playing Pro Evolution. And the others are playing FIFA, you know, just the guys who are more casual, et cetera. I think the thing, and you can't really fault FIFA for resting on its laurels, so to speak, bunch of lazy bums not doing anything, just sitting around and racking in the cash. I mean, geez. But in reality, FIFA, what it did this year, when the features were announced, I mean, I don't know if you guys remember back to this, but I was honestly pretty underwhelmed by just what they were talking about, emotional intelligence, et cetera. It was like, I just remember thinking, this is great. I'm probably not playing this game this year. I mean, none of this makes me excited. And that was coming off of a year where I had played, you know, well over 100 games of FIFA. So I just think that the problem with FIFA and where it's gone this year, and why it has, you know, why it has dropped a spot in our fictional power rankings from last year, is just because, yeah, there wasn't much. The game is still great. I mean, let's not mince words. The game is still great,
right?
But it's just like what we wanted out of it. You know, where it seemed like the momentum was going, it just seemed like it kind of stalled this year. And I don't know if that's something that continues into this year, this upcoming year, or if it's something that, for all intents and purposes, was a one-year thing. They were trying to get a foundation to start moving forward again. I don't know. But it definitely didn't seem like the game this year had much to draw somebody who was a more casual person in, that's for sure.
You know, it's interesting, too, because we didn't even say it about Madden, but the online play in Madden and the online play in FIFA are two strengths. Like, we killed MLB The Show for its lousy online. You know, we give, you know, even NBA 2K, it's online struggles, right? It is not a strength. Whereas FIFA and Madden, for the most part, are, I would say, are the two strongest games online. So it seems like even a game like you know, FIFA, it does so many things so right, but it just, like you said, it didn't keep the momentum going. It's a great game. It's incredibly enjoyable in a lot of ways, but it just didn't pack that extra punch this year, it seems like, that it has in years past. Brian Weedy, your additional thoughts.
Yeah, that's a good point about online. That should always be spoken about, especially because people, again, are playing from all around the world, and somehow the games are smooth and reliable. But I also wanted to mention that as far as FIFA goes, one of its best things is just the general experience of playing FIFA. There is no more thrill than playing a game of FIFA because of the amazing presentation and the amazing atmosphere and the amazing emotion and commentary, and everything just converges on those moments. Yes. There's nothing like it in sports gaming.
100% agreed.
Yeah, yeah, scoring a goal is just excellent. And also, by the way, the reason why they have all those online games and they work flawlessly, I have it on good authority that they actually have some hamsters on steroids running those servers. I'm just letting you know.
Whatever they pump those guys with, just keep it keep it going.
It's what Barry Bonds was using a few years ago. I mean, I'm sorry.
So we can point out all the reasons why it didn't advance necessarily from the year before or the years prior to that, but still it has that experience even online or offline, and there's several various modes where you still get that experience of the thrill of the moment and the thrill of achievement, or the thrill of giving the thrill of failure. Actually, it's the only game, FIFA is the only series where I might give up a goal and I'm not really upset about it. I'm more amazed by it. I'm like, wow, that just happened. You had one, Rich, against me in an online game where you kicked it in with the back of your foot. And I was like, I wanted to throw my controller, but then at the same time, I just was kind of in wonder of what you had just done. So it's one of the few, and this has been the case for a while now. It's many games you have people who quit online and stuff. You fall behind, you quit, whatever. FIFA is one of the few games where even if I'm losing, even if I end up losing, I've still enjoyed my time, and I don't feel like I just wasted whatever time I put into it. So I think that tells you kind of what the game means, and that the experience of playing it maybe outweighs the actual technical problems that we point out or that we feel are kind of inadequate these days.
So that brings us to number one, and unless you missed the first, six games on the list, it's pretty obvious what is number one. And again, we want to stress that the power rankings are not just quality, it's not just sales, it's not just the community. It is a qualitative / quantitative analysis of all of those things. So number one on the sports game power rankings heading into the kickoff of the official new season next month is NBA 2K. 2K Sports basketball franchise doesn't just simulate basketball games, it simulates a basketball life. In no other video game can you do anything like take a non-roster invitee through a multi-year storyline involving shady agents, maniac coaches, jealous teammates, scheming general managers, and high school mentors from a 10-day contract to the Hall of Fame. As a general manager, confront the sometimes unreasonable expectation of your team's owner while keeping individual players happy and cracking the whip on the coaching staff over a decade or more. Pit 30 of the greatest teams in NBA history against one another in an 82-game season with full playoffs to settle which one was really the greatest team of all time, and gamble virtual and valuable in-game currency and pick up basketball games against people across the world. NBA 2K15 is the class of sports video gaming. It is not perfect. It has issues, but it puts the most effort into delivering a rich sports fantasy, both on the court and off. Brian Weedy, any qualms at all with NBA 2K being at the top of the power rankings list?
No, I think it hits on all the areas we were examining. Sales, it's right near the top now. Worldwide, it's probably just behind FIFA. In North America, it trails Madden. But quality, it's right up again as far as reviews go, and certainly as far as consumer perception goes, it's right at the top. Community, it's a very heavily community-based game. As far as value goes, I think depth of content and unique experiences, it's the strongest game in terms of $60 value you're going to get. Because you can go in, you can play that career mode experience, which is more like a story mode. You can do your traditional franchise. You can do the really customizable franchise mode that's just offline. There are online leagues, though they don't really work or aren't sufficient anymore. There's the card collecting mode, the My Team mode, which is similar to Ultimate Team. Then you have various team-up modes online. So there's so much to do, and it appeals to so many different types of gamers that I think it's easily the number one game as far as a power ranking would go, because it's not weak in any areas. Now, you can look at, yes, server reliability and online performance is probably its biggest issue, but even that was pretty much limited to the first couple weeks of release. Other than that, I mean, the game has been cruising along, and its post-release support has improved this year. They've gotten better with roster updates. The patches, only done a couple, but what they focused on was stuff that really actually mattered, as opposed to the past where it was kind of questionable what they put their time into. So I think they've improved in many areas, and they've shored up some of their weaknesses, and they don't have the faults that some of the other series do. So I think that's a natural number one for it right now.
Everybody who listens to this show knows me, knows that I am a freak with NBA 2K. I play it almost every day. I'm playing two modes. I continue to play two modes religiously. The first mode is I'm playing my GM, and I'm now in the playoffs. Random funny thing, I finished as a number two seed. I have the Brooklyn Nets, but I... Through injury and trade, my entire starting lineup, there isn't a single real net that is in my starting lineup. And it ain't like I'm 3 years in the future. I'm just this year. But anyway, I finished the number two seed. I am playing the New York Knicks in the first round of the playoffs. I'm up 3-0. And as soon as I win the third game at Madison Square Garden, instead of going back to the main menu, all of a sudden I'm the general manager and I'm standing in my owner's office. And the owner says to me, "I just want you to know I bought a whole bunch of broom props. So you better sweep that. You better win that next game so we get that sweep. Are you going to do that for me?" And then I have the option to say, you know, I'm definitely going to do it, or, oh, I don't know. And of course, I say, you know, I'm going to do it. Then he goes, sweep, sweep, sweep. Like, these just little moments that happen in this game. And you're talking after 82 regular season games, 3 playoff games, little moments like that are just fantastic. Chris Sanner, any concern on your part, any issue with, or do you think the Operation Sports community will have any issue with NBA 2K being ranked number one at the top of the power rankings list?
Well, I mean, the simple fact is you shouldn't have any problem, because in all aspects, honestly, from presentation to on court / field / whatever the heck else you play, it's the best when it comes to modes. I mean, geez, when it comes to my GM, etc., there's just it's just a game that is so well done. And then when you talk about the community that 2K has built around this game, especially when it comes to social media, etc., the it's just far and above any other game. The class, the things they have done have made this into a cultural phenomenon unlike any other game. I mean, even Madden to many extents, and this is I'm giving my honest opinion on last week's debate on the press row, but no, I mean, Madden hasn't even managed to take over social media the way NBA 2K is able to. So, you know, the Madden, I just think that there's just so much about this game that is good. Now, you got to get into the you can't mention NBA 2K and gush over it without also saying that if they have another launch like they did last year, et cetera, et cetera, you know, that these are things that they just shouldn't happen. You shouldn't have to worry about connecting to a server to play a single player mode. I mean, that's just simple. You know, it just seems simple to me. Seems simple enough. But at the same time, everything about this game is quality. I mean, there's you can come up with your gripes, but this game, by all intents and purposes, has reached a level that few sports games have ever reached. as a series. And I think going forward, the real question I'm having is what can they do to keep improving upon that? Because you really got to wonder if there's going to be a little bit of stagnation with just so much they've done right the last several years. It's just something that's always in the back of your mind.
Yeah, I mean, I play it a lot. And just like with anything, you know, when you play 100, you know, 150 plus games in multiple modes, you definitely see things that need improving. I mean, you know, sometimes my guys get stuck in animations, you know, sometimes I will see, you know, weird dribbling. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, in my player, after we just won a game by 20 points, we have a practice and the coach is yelling at us that we didn't play well enough or that, you know, I'm not doing the right things. You know, there's all these little things. But at an overall level, the experience of playing NBA 2K, you know, it's almost silly to say it, but if I had to pick one sports game and I could only play one sports game, it would be NBA 2K. Simply because there's so many different ways to enjoy it. Now, luckily, I don't have to make that choice, and I am able to happily play Pro Evo and NBA 2K and Madden, and you know the new MLB The Show is coming out, and you know there's, you know, the best thing about power rankings is that they are power rankings. It's not, you know, exclusive of one another. Even, you know, number 8 on this list, NBA Live, has things that are good. You know, it's kind of interesting that, you know, NBA games start and end the power rankings list. None of the games in this list are perfect. Obviously, some are better and some are, you know, much, much better than others. All these games have improvements that can be made. All of them have areas that, you know, need to be addressed. And all of them have significant value to the people who play them. And that's why even in a shrinking sports game landscape, there's still a lot that we can be happy about. You know, it's criticism does not necessarily mean negativity. Criticism just means, hey, we invest our time and our money and our entertainment, you know, our entertainment budget significantly in these. So, you know, we want everything to get better and everything to improve, but can also enjoy things that we know are flawed in certain ways. Because, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of good people making these games and there's a lot of good people playing these games. And that's why we're all here. So thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight for the inaugural sports game power rankings. I want to thank Brian Wiedei from Pasta Padre and Chris Sanner from Operation Sports for joining me here tonight. And as always, thank you to all of the listeners. Much appreciated. Thanks for all that you do. We would not be here if it were not for you, and we would not be here if it were not for the great people at Operation Sports. So thank you, everybody, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast brought to you by Operation Sports. We ask that you please subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher and the Windows phones. We also ask that you give us a rating. That really helps us a lot. We also ask that you please follow each of our panelists on Twitter, and they are as follows. Polygon's Owen Good at Owen Good. Pasta Padre's Brian Wiedei at Pasta Padre. Polygon Sumit Sarkar at Sumit Sarkar. Sports Gamers TJ Lowerman at That Sports Gamer, US Gamers Cat Bailey at The Underscore Cat Bot, Operation Sports Chris Sanner at Chris SNR, and Operation Sports Steve Noe at Steve Underscore OS, and of course me, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham. So thank you so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate it, and we really want to thank the great people at Operation Sports for making this show happen every single week. So thanks, and we'll see you again next time.